The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to a new edition of the Valentine's Views podcast here on Big Blue View Radio, part of the SB Nation family of podcasts. I'm your host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. Today's show is going to feature a pair of interviews that I did as we prepare for Sunday's game against the Minnesota Vikings. One of those interviews is with Newsday Giants beat writer Tom Rock. Tom has recently published a book called Miracle Moments in New York Giants football history. We'll talk to Tom about that book, about what he learned, and some of the interesting things you'll find in that book, as well as how you can get it as you prepare to do your Christmas shopping for the Giants fans in your family. Yes, believe it or not, it's time to actually begin thinking about that. The other interview is with Chris Gates of SB Nation's Daily Norseman, which covers the Minnesota Vikings. So we'll talk with Chris about the Vikings, about what he expects to see on Sunday. So before we get to both of those interviews, wanted to just quickly say, you know, we've seen the videos of Saquon Barkley practicing, or not necessarily practicing, but at least stretching and running and cutting a little bit on the sidelines as practice has unfolded this week for the Giants. Still think it would be absolutely stunning to see Barkley play on Sunday against the Vikings, which would be 2 weeks from the time that he suffered the high ankle sprain in week three, against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Perhaps more likely that Barkley gets some playing time on Thursday night against the New England Patriots. That's still a really, really quick, really kind of amazing turnaround time for a comeback from a high ankle sprain. So we'll see, but it's pretty obvious that Barkley is going to return to the Giants sooner rather than later. But I would still caution folks not to get too excited and not to count on him playing on Sunday. Coach Pat Shurmur hasn't ruled it out, and why would he rule it out? Why wouldn't he make the Vikings prepare for Barkley, even if Barkley is not going to play? And we'll see how that all unfolds. We'll get the final injury report on Friday afternoon, and we'll know one way or the other whether or not to expect Saquon in the lineup on Sunday. But as of now, I'm saying that I seriously doubt that we'll see Saquon. Anyway, let's get to the two interviews that I did. First, you'll hear from Tom Rock, and then you'll hear my interview with Chris Gates of the Daily Norseman. Those two interviews will be separated by a short break for a word from our sponsors. So let's get to those two interviews right now.
All right, Giants fans, I'm joined now by Newsday Giants beat writer Tom Rock, author of the book Miracle Moments in New York Giants Football History, and I'm bringing Tom on first and foremost to tell us a little bit about that book. Tom, thank you very, very much for spending some time with me.
Ed, thanks for having me on. Yeah, very exciting time for with the book coming out and everything, and it kind of coincides with a new chapter of Giants history as they turn the page on the Eli Manning era and move forward with the Daniel Jones one.
Yes, it is. It's a really, really interesting time for the Giants. I know you're not having fun this morning, stuck in some traffic there, but, you know, we'll occupy your time a little bit.
That's fine. Hey, listen, I listen to podcasts sometimes when I'm stuck in traffic. I might as well be on one.
There you go. So tell us a little bit about how this book came about. You know, we'll start there, and then you tell us a little bit maybe about what people are going to find.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, as you may have noticed, this is the 100th NFL season. They've kind of been whispering and haven't really played that up much around the league. But it is the 100th NFL season, and obviously there are some hallmark teams that have been around for all of that time. And the Giants are sadly not one of them. They came in a couple of years later, but they've been around for 95 of those 100 years. And I think when we think about the Giants, we tend to think of the day-to-day, week-to-week sense of their history. But, you know, they're as much a fat part of the fabric of New York sports and really the nation's sports consciousness as anyone, maybe as the Yankees and other teams like that. So I think that the Giants really hold an important part of our collective sports history. And I thought it was important to kind of look at that and go back all the way to 1925 when they first formed, when Tim Mara bought the charter and how they've evolved over the years.
It's interesting, I think, because people, as you said, you get caught up in the day-to-day. You get caught up in the fact that the last few years haven't been good. And you can easily forget that over the years, over the decades, Giants fans have been really, really lucky to see some great teams, to see some great moments, and as the title of your book indicates, to see some miracles happen for this franchise.
Yeah, and they happened right away too, Ed. You know, one of the things that I really enjoyed doing with this book was looking back at the earliest games and the 20s and the 30s, and you know, 1927, they won a championship. There wasn't even a championship game. It was just kind of a playoff game. It was an in-season game, and at that point in the NFL, they sort of just voted on the champion because it was almost like the old college football system, because the people played on even schedules. Some people played 10 games, some people played 8, some people played 12. There was no real way to determine a champion other than just looking at it and saying, okay, well, they're the best team. They're the champion. So what happened actually in that 1927 game, 2 years after they formed, Giants win this game, and one of the key plays is they run a fake punt from their own end zone. Could you imagine the team doing that now, Ed, running a fake punt from their own end zone? But it worked. They gained the yard. It was a slog fest against the Chicago Bears. They convert this punt. They throw the ball. There's a little chicanery involved there where they ask the official to wipe the mud off the ball, and while the defense is kind of looking at that, they realign their alignment in the backfield, and then they run this fake. They get out of their own end zone, and you know, back then football was like trench warfare. You know, it was a field position game. So they got out there and they were able to beat the Bears and win the championship. Of course, at that point it wasn't the championship game. They still had two games to play, and they actually had to beat, believe it or not, 27 Yankees, the 1927 Yankees, which was a football team back then. So that's part of the history that I really liked looking into and finding out more about.
It is really, really interesting when you look back at what the NFL was versus what it is now, and it sounds like this book, as you go through Giants history, sort of takes you through some of the different chapters of the NFL.
Absolutely, and like I said, you know, the Giants have sort of been along for the ride the whole time. You know, they're whenever there's a turning point, I think, for this league, you find the Giants. So it's in the beginning, right? And then you get to the television era, and you say the greatest game ever played. That was a Giants loss, but it was certainly a victory for the entire league. And you know, right up to these Super Bowls, you know, these most recent Super Bowls where. You know, Super Bowls for a long time were kind of these lopsided affairs, and they were sort of ugly, and you know, people always kind of made fun of them that, you know, it was one side or the other. And I remember going to some Super Bowl parties where we just left at halftime because the Cowboys were beating the Steelers so badly and things like that. Patriots beating the Bears beating the Patriots, and then the Giants and the Patriots, they meet in these last two Super Bowls with the Giants, and all of a sudden they're exciting games in there, and it sort of ushered in this new era of the competitive Super Bowl. Last year obviously wasn't kind of a slam bang game, but it was certainly competitive, and it was a one score game in the fourth quarter, which really I think is all you can ask for. But I think, yeah, to get back to your point, you know, the league has changed so much. You know, I don't know that Tim Mara or even Wellington Mara would recognize where we are now compared to what the league that they helped form and the league that they helped bring together.
I hear you on that, Tom. Just tell me quickly before we move on to talk a little bit about the present day Giants. Tell me, you know, quickly. Was there anything really that you learned about the Giants, or any real favorite moments in the book that you'd kind of like to point out?
You know, some of the things. Obviously, there's no spoilers, right? I mean, we know the games that they won. We know the games that they lost. One of the things that really intrigued me about this was talking to people about how they felt at moments and the things that happened that seemed bad that they turned around. So one of the most fascinating parts to me was when Ray Perkins decided to quit on them in the middle of the season, and they were kind of stuck and they didn't know what to do with their head coach, and they didn't have or plan B. They had no sense of what direction to go in, and they had this guy on their staff who kind of had a little bit of experience. He had been the head coach at Air Force for a year, and they said, all right, well, I guess we'll name him the head coach, and it turned out to be a Hall of Famer, Bill Parcells. You know, you look at the decision to bring in George Young, which I think is the most important decision that the Giants made in the last half century. You know, he was a guy that, you know, at the point, the two sides of the Mara family couldn't even discuss. They both wanted him, but they both knew that if one side suggested him, the other side would dismiss him out of spite, basically. So they had to finagle a way for the commissioner to actually suggest that he come in and George Young become the general manager of the Giants. So there's a lot of those stories, and then, you know, the human elements. I love talking to Phil Simms about his Super Bowl experience and just how, you know, the regret he had that he didn't soak it in more, that he didn't appreciate it more. You know, it kind of felt, you know, he was just ready to play the next team after that Broncos game, and there was no next team, and that was the highlight of his career, and he didn't really appreciate it at the time. And then talking to the guys on the 1990 team, you know, obviously it was a big emotional time where the country was at war, you know, Whitney Houston with the national anthem and everything. But what happened was at the end of the game, because of that, of those outside situations, everything was so subdued and so downplayed that when they got back to the hotel and they kind of came on separate buses, and they got back to the hotel and this big ballroom was dark, and there was like one table on the corner, and there was a cooler of Cokes, and there was a table with sandwiches on it and heroes, and that was just kind of their Super Bowl championship. And everybody went in different directions. Nobody stayed around for the parade, and that was the last game for Bill Parcells. That was the last game for Bill Belichick. That was the last game for a lot of these guys. And it just kind of, you know, the game was such a dynamic game, but after that, it just fizzled out. And so talk to these guys about their memories and their emotions of the games that we've all seen, that we all know how they end and how they turn out, to find out what was going on behind the scenes, I think was the most interesting part.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the present day Giants. Then I'll let you tell folks where they can get the book.
Sure.
As we kind of indicated at the beginning, this is a really, really interesting time in Giants history. They're moving on from the two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback, longest tenured player in franchise history. They've won two straight games. The way that I've written it, the way that I've looked at it, the biggest thing that this change to Daniel Jones has given this franchise, the biggest thing is, you know, a team that hasn't been winning for a while now, no matter what they do the rest of this year, I look at it like they have some hope now. They've sort of just changed the narrative and changed the feeling around the franchise.
Well, I think that's important, and I think one of the drawbacks, the sort of unspoken drawbacks of having Eli Manning as your quarterback is that he's a two-time Super Bowl MVP, but he did those things when a lot of these kids, the guys on the team now, were in high school or even in middle school. I mean, when he won his first Super Bowl, there are guys on the team who weren't allowed to stay up late enough to watch the end of that game. So you're talking about people who come in and when they play with Eli Manning, I think there's always a sense of looking to him to save them and looking to him to make the plays, because he's the guy that when they were growing up, they always watched him make those plays. And now they're with Daniel Jones, and he's more of their contemporary, right? And so they're tied to him, and so I think it allows them to play more in the present and more for their own future than. You know, when you're playing with Eli Manning, you're always kind of playing with the past. And I don't mean playing in the past. I mean, you know, you're playing with this sort of historic figure, and the expectations change. So when you're a young guy and you're 22 years old like Saquon, or, you know, in your mid-20s like Sterling Shepard, and all of a sudden you have a young quarterback who doesn't have that big high profile yet, I think it awakens something in you, and there's a responsibility to rise to the occasion. I don't think it's a coincidence that the last couple of games we've seen the best play from Evan Engram and the best play from Sterling Shepard, and the defense has risen to the occasion because they need to help this young quarterback along. They feel a sense of responsibility. So I think you're right. I think that sense of hope, it really permeates things, and with Eli, it felt like it was more stagnant. It was more week to week, and we were just looking towards the next game. And now there's a sense of, oh, well, this may take off into something, and it may not be this year, it may not be next year, but there's a sense that there's a possibility that there's a long term future plan. And I think as long as Eli Manning was the quarterback, the expiration date on his quarterback, on his career, always prevented that from being the case.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You know, I was one who, when I looked at it, I never really, you know, a lot of people wanted to say, well, it's Eli Manning's fault that they're losing and they're not winning, and the year after year they haven't done it. And I didn't look at it that way. I thought in a lot of ways Eli was just, he was what he was, and you know, the last few years he didn't have enough around him. But it's when they made this move, a lot of people thought it was early, but at 0-2, I don't know how you felt, and so we'll get to that in a second, but I felt like making the move at 0-2 was the right thing to do, simply because you look at how young that defense is, you looked at how they had so many young pieces, you know, with Barkley and Engram and Will Hernandez and so many of the young players on offense, and I thought it was time to fully embrace the fact that they had to be about the future. So no matter how it worked out or works out for this year, I thought it was the right thing to do.
Well, I think it was the right thing to do, and it was probably the right thing to do months before that, because I think that the problem I had with this year was not that they stuck with Eli Manning and not that they drafted Daniel Jones, but that they did both. And when you go into a season with two quarterbacks like that, it's impossible for them both to succeed at the same time. It just can't happen. So either you say, okay, Eli's our guy, and we're going to use that sixth overall pick, and we're going to help him win, or you say, thanks for the memories, Eli, and they were great, and I don't think anybody would have really killed the Giants for making that decision in February or March or whatever, and said, listen, we had a great run with Eli Manning. It's time to move on. So you know that to me is the situation that the Giants put themselves in. When that change came, listen, it's the last 2 weeks have shown us that Pat Shermer's offense works better with a mobile quarterback than it does with an immobile one. And Eli Manning, for all that he brings to the field and all that he can give to a Giants offense, is not a mobile quarterback. And so, this is a much better match for this team right now, this quarterback Daniel Jones and this coach Pat Shermer, than it was with Eli Manning.
And let's go into this a little bit. 2-2, facing Minnesota on Sunday. I still think that the Giants are a ways away from, if you wanted to put them in, if you wanted to look at contender versus pretender. It's nice to feel optimistic about this year, but do you agree with me that it really still, for the Giants, isn't really about 2019? It's about 2020 and what comes after that.
I agree with that. I agree that you can hope and you can and so maybe this game against the Vikings and certainly the game against the Patriots next Thursday, you see where you are and you see where you need to be. And that's important for these young players too, is to sort of get a sense and gauge what the top tier really looks like and go out and play against it. And I think they got a little bit of that in the first week in Dallas, because I think Dallas is one of the elite teams in the league. I think that first game of the season really probably said more about the Cowboys than it did about the Giants. I think this is an interesting time. Listen, they could be 2-4 at the end of this stretch. I always think back to a chapter from the book about the end of the 2004 season, and they were playing the Cowboys. They had lost 6 in a row, and John Mara was sort of on the field before the game, kicking rocks around, and pretty depressed about the state of the franchise. And Bill Parcells, who was the head coach of the Cowboys at the time, came over, and John said, "How you doing, Bill?" And Bill Parcells says, "Not as good as you're doing." And John said, "What are you talking about? We've lost 6 games in a row. We can't win. We can't beat anybody. It's been a miserable season." And Bill Parcells said, "Yes, but you have a quarterback." And I think if at the end of this season, if the Giants can look in the mirror and say, "We have a quarterback," I think that's the key to moving forward.
There you go. Tom, I appreciate your time. Why don't you tell folks where they can get the book before I let you go?
Sure. Well, it's Miracle Moments in New York Giants Football History. It's published by Skyhorse Publishing. It's got a bunch of great pictures in there, a bunch of great stories. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you buy books, in bookstores, mostly in the New York and New Jersey area. Check it out. I mean, it's a great gift for a Giants fan in your life, or if you like to immerse yourself in the history of the franchise, go out and pick it up.
And Christmas is coming, folks, so
it's coming,
grab
it's coming
a book.
For,
there you go. Yes, it is. All right, Tom, I know you're stuck in traffic. You're not moving very fast, but hopefully you get over to the facility eventually, and we appreciate your spending some time with me.
I got to make some Saquon cuts here through traffic and dodge and dive.
Oh, I'm going to leave you to that one. All right, thanks, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, I'm joined now by Chris Gates of SB Nation's Daily Norseman that covers the Minnesota Vikings, the team that your New York Giants will be playing on Sunday. Chris, thank you very much for taking some time to chat with me today.
Not a problem, Ed. Thank you for having me on.
So let's get right into it. You know, we've got the Vikings are 2-2 at this point. Giants are 2-2. Vikings are a 5-point favorite. And the big story with the Vikings these days is really, you know, from the outside anyway, has got to be Kirk Cousins and what's going on with the Minnesota passing attack. What are your thoughts on Cousins at this point?
I've got to be honest. I don't know what has happened since the early part of last season with Kirk Cousins. I mean, if you look at some of the early games from 2018, I mean, he had games against the Packers and the Rams and the Eagles where he was throwing the ball all over the place. And, you know, the offensive line was still terrible and he was still taking hits, but he was, you know, generating yardage, generating touchdowns. And, you know, at some point last season, something changed and I don't know what it is, but he just hasn't been the same. I don't know if he's scared or what the issue is. His teammates say that it isn't a lack of confidence issue with him or anything like that, but there's something that has definitely changed from the early part of last season to where we are right now. I don't know if it's coaching. I don't know if it's something else that we're not privy to or anything, but I think the guy still has the ability to be a better than average quarterback, but he just hasn't shown that over the first 4 weeks of this season.
So on Wednesday, I was able to be on the New York media conference call with Minnesota coach Mike Zimmer. And we asked Coach Zimmer, we were talking about Daniel Jones. And as I think about it, I wonder if something that Zimmer said was actually directed more at Kirk Cousins than it might have been at Daniel Jones. And because he said when he watches Daniel Jones that he's playing free, that he sees something and he turns the ball loose and he's just playing without worrying about the ramifications of making a mistake or what might go wrong or anything like that. And when you think about a comment like that, do you think that something like that might be sort of a veiled message, you know, to Cousins to relax and play a little bit looser?
I mean, from what we've heard from Zimmer over the years, the way he kind of, you know, conducts himself in interviews and the way he does that sort of thing, it would absolutely not be surprising to me if that's what he was getting at. But, yeah, you know, we've seen some of the film gurus on Twitter doing their film clips and whatnot, and I mean you can see guys running free, and I don't know if Cousins just doesn't see them or if he's looking somewhere else, or like what Zimmer implied apparently in this press conference, that he's just so afraid to make a bad throw and turn the ball over that he's just settling for 4 and 5 yard passes when there's 20-yard gains available. So, I mean, part of that as well is Zimmer and the coaching staff. I mean, I don't know if he's, being told to look for certain things first or if he's, you know, just not looking in the right places at the right time. But, you know, Kirk Cousins or if Mike Zimmer wants Kirk Cousins to be more free and more loose, he plays a role in that too. And, yeah, like I said, I'm not behind the scenes. I don't know what Mike Zimmer tells Kirk Cousins at practice every day. I don't know what's said on the sidelines during the actual games themselves. But, yeah, that's kind of a two-way street if the coach wants the quarterback to be a little more loose with the football. And, you know, hopefully if that's what he's trying to tell Cousins takes that to heart and starts doing that kind of thing.
All right, so Minnesota is 2-2 entering Sunday's game. The Giants are also 2-2, and the way the season started for the Giants, that has to be looked at as a good 2-2, as a positive 2-2. You look at where Minnesota is, Do you feel good about them at 2-2, or are you disappointed to see 2-2, you know, a quarter of the way through the season?
It's a little strange because I think that, you know, when people went through the schedule in the preseason and started making their predictions, they probably had the Vikings at 2-2 after the first four games, just because, you know, the two road games, one at Lambeau Field and one at Soldier Field. The Vikings are historically pretty bad at Soldier Field over the years. But, I think that despite the fact that a lot of fans probably projected the Vikings to be 2-2 after their first four games, the way they've looked in those two losses probably makes this incredibly disappointing. I mean, they got off to the slow start in Green Bay, got down 21-0 essentially after the first quarter, and still had an opportunity to come back and win that football game at the end and wound up coming up short. And then the just awful performance that we saw in Chicago, which was also for most of the afternoon a winnable game if the offense could have executed anything. They took care of business at home against two teams that don't appear to be very good, which is what we expected. So, yeah, there's a little bit of a strange dichotomy there that, like I said, when the schedule first came out and we saw those first four games, I think a lot of people expected the Vikings to be 2-2, but it's the way they've gotten to 2-2 in those four games that I think has a lot of people disappointed.
So how does this game Sunday against the Giants shape up for Minnesota, just in terms of how important it is?
They need to not only have a good performance, they need to have a good performance away from U.S. Bank Stadium. I mean, the two home games they played, they beat Atlanta pretty good, and they beat Oakland even worse. And on paper, you know, this is one of those games where you probably look at it and say, yeah, the Vikings are the better football team. You know, obviously games aren't played on paper, but, you know, they're a five-point favorite, so I guess other people are seeing it as well. But, yeah, they need to have a decent performance away from home just to prove to themselves, I think, that they can do that. And, you know, this is going to be an important game for them because, yeah, coming up after the Giants game, they have to host the Eagles. And, so they need to get themselves on a roll here, especially considering that their two losses means they're now 0-2 in the division, and they need to start picking up wins in other places as well. So this is a pretty big game for a Week 5 contest for this team, I think.
Your thoughts quickly on Daniel Jones and on how he kind of changes the dynamic of this game.
I haven't gotten to see a lot of Daniel Jones, unfortunately, because, you know, just I think the Week 3 game, I can't remember what I was doing after the Vikings played, but I haven't seen a lot of him, unfortunately. We are kind of sad to not see Eli Manning back there because the Vikings have kind of had his number over the years, but I think it's a lot of what you talked about. I mean, he's a young quarterback. He wants to go out there. He wants to make every play a big play, and, you know, he sees something open and he just lets it go. And, you know, Manning might not have had quite that same ability at this point just because of, you know, who he is and what he's always done. But, yeah, I think that changes things a lot because, you know, I'm not sure about Eli's arm strength at this point, but I know I've seen enough of Daniel Jones where you have to defend a whole lot more of the field, I think, than you would if Eli Manning was back there. So especially with Saquon Barkley not being there, that offense is going to rely a lot on him and trying to make big plays. And, you know, this defense needs to be up to the task.
When you think about this game, for you, how do you see it unfolding? How do you see, you know, I don't want to ask you for a prediction, but what's your guess on how it unfolds on Sunday?
I think Mike Zimmer is going to have quite a few things for Daniel Jones that he probably hasn't seen to this point. I mean, as bad as the offense has been in the first four games for the Vikings, the defense has still been very good. Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter have been just terrific on the edges at defensive end for the first four games. And from what we've seen of the Giants offensive tackles to this point, that's probably bad news for them. So I think that Mike Zimmer is going to do everything he can to kind of get Daniel Jones hearing footsteps early on. And if he can do that and, you know, kind of limit that Giants offense a little bit, it should help open things up a little bit for the Vikings on offense. So, yeah, I think the big plan is to get after Daniel Jones, hoping that the rookie can't make as many big plays as he's going to need. And, yeah, we'll see how things go from there.
All right, Chris, thank you very much for spending some time with me. We appreciate that, and you know, we'll see how things go on Sunday. We just hope both sides come out of the game healthy and have good seasons after Sunday. So thanks again for joining me.
Not a problem, man. Thank you for having me on.
And that's our show for today, Giants fans. Our thanks to Tom Rock of Newsday and to Chris Gates of SB Nation's Daily Norseman for spending some time with us, for dropping some knowledge on us about the, for Chris about the Vikings, Tom talking about the Giants, and about his newly released book. We ask you, as always, if you haven't done so, please remember to subscribe to Big Blue View Radio on all of your favorite podcast applications. If you haven't joined the community at BigBlueView.com, please do that. Please remember to check us out on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter at BigBlueView. So please, you know, check out all of our different platforms where you can find information about your favorite NFL team. We thank you very much for listening, Giants fans, and we will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.